We are in Holy Week, Passion Week, and we have some activities here that we are that we use to prepare us mentally and spiritually for the weekend. So we have a service here Thursday evening, the Maundy Thursday service. Last year we did a labyrinth where I rearranged the chairs with some other people, and we did a meditative, reflective walk through the labyrinth, reflecting on the journey toward the cross. This year we're doing a tenebrae service where we'll have candles that will be lit as we go through the readings, and then extinguished as we go through the story as well. So consider being a part of that. The time is printed in your bulletin. As I was reflecting on the story this past week, a name came to my mind, and this may not be a name that's familiar to you, but I thought I would go through this man's story. Wes Hayden is his name. I suspect his name is not familiar to many of you. If you know the story, then you can kind of keep it secret, although for reasons that may become clear, you may want to keep it secret. Anyway, Wes Hayden is a country music singer. And as with many performers, he was looking for an opportunity to get a larger audience for his country music. And it wasn't working. And then an opportunity came to him. Now, Wes Hayden isn't known particularly for his country music at this point. In fact, for a little while, in some circles, he was called the most hated man in America. Now, it isn't because his country music was particularly bad. He has sort of a contemporary George Strait kind of sound, maybe a Clay Walker. Not everybody knows who those people are. But it wasn't really because of the quality of his music that he was hated. Wes Hayden was a contestant on The Bachelorette. Now, you know why I don't know his name, maybe. Wes Hayden was not celebrated as a particularly virtuous contestant on The Bachelorette, as though they were all so virtuous, of course. But Wes Hayden went on The Bachelorette to promote his country music career. Now, for those of you who don't know, The Bachelorette is a TV show where there is an eligible woman, and she is presented with a number of gentlemen, 16 I think she starts with, and over the course of 10 episodes, she eliminates them until she has chosen one. And then, presumably, they live happily ever after. And so Wes Hayden went on this show not because he was interested in pursuing a relationship with The Bachelorette, but because he knew that being exposed to a national audience would give him an opportunity to talk about his music, to perform some of his music, and perhaps gain new fans. But the people who were watching The Bachelorette weren't particularly excited about his approach to the TV show. And every opportunity that he had, he would talk about his music. Now, he went through the game, he went through the events of the show, as though he were trying to develop a relationship with The Bachelorette. And so she believed his intentions to be sincere, and she kept him around. In fact, he was only eliminated in week 8. That means he would have finished 4th place. Only then was it revealed to The Bachelorette that he, in fact, had a girlfriend back in Texas, and he had no interest in maintaining a relationship with The Bachelorette. He was simply using the show's fame as a platform for his music. And so he became known and famous, infamous perhaps, for being on the show for all the wrong reasons. And so this is an oft-quoted phrase about him when he was on the show. Now, what ended up happening was one of the other contestants, had heard him talking about his other girlfriend and couldn't take it anymore, and then eventually told the bachelorette the truth, and she found out that this was in fact correct, and then she eliminated him from the show. Now this should have been for the best, right? This was for the best for everybody. Obviously it was for the best for her because she didn't have this insincere contestant on the show anymore. It was for the best of the other candidates because then this guy wasn't making the rest of them look bad. And it was for the best of the show, right? Because the pursuit was somehow less legitimate with this guy still in the show. And so it was for everybody's best interest if he was gone, wasn't it? Well, after that, if you follow the show, and most of you will say that you don't, some of you probably still do, but if you follow the show, there are very often candidates who are not there for the right reasons. Now, with any aspect of reality TV, there is some scripted nature to it. And so Wes was talking during the little interview portions, and whenever he got a chance, he would talk about his music in such a way that it was obvious that this is what he was doing. And so the fan base hated him. But the producers knew what was going on. They had selected those clips. They had heard what he had said. And so shouldn't they have alerted the bachelorette to what was happening? And shouldn't they in the future prevent this from happening? Well, in fact, what happened was everybody was talking about it. And everybody was talking about how much they hated him. And they hated him so much that they wanted to see the next episode to see if he would get knocked off. Now, this is a good thing for the producers because everybody is watching. I even watched one of the episodes because so many people were talking about how much they hated him. And I wanted to see if he was as big of a jerk as everybody says he was. And so the producers have learned that it doesn't matter what the reasons are that these people are in the show. If people hate them, they will talk about them, and then people will watch the show more and more. And so, for the producers, there is actually a benefit for people following for the wrong reasons. Now, obviously, I'm not an expert on reality TV. And most of you wouldn't consider yourselves followers of reality programming. And so why am I talking about it Sunday morning? Well, here we have a similar situation. Now, if I had entitled my sermon Bachelorette Jesus, I might have turned some people away. But in some ways, this is what is happening. That Jesus is entering Jerusalem in some ways as the bachelorette. And a crowd of people have celebrated Jesus' arrival. And they have declared themselves fans and followers of this new king. And they have made it known to everybody that they are celebrating at this arrival and they are worshiping him. Now, as we look at the story, Jesus is doing everything to prepare for this entry. Jesus tells his followers to find the colt. He tells them he knows what's happening and he's preparing for this entry. Even though we suspect Jesus sees the big picture, Jesus knows that a good number of people in the crowd who are celebrating and chanting Hosanna on Palm Sunday, some of them will be the same ones who are shouting crucify him a week later. And so Jesus is aware of this dichotomy. Jesus is aware that some of these people are less than sincere in their worship. Or at least Jesus is aware that some of them won't be able to handle the reality of what happens over the course of the week. And so wouldn't Jesus discourage them from their insincere worship? Now looking again at the bachelorette as a comparison, it is in everybody's best interests for the insincere candidates to be eliminated. Except for the producers of the show eventually recognized that this sort of controversy led to more popularity. The people hated this contestant, but they seemed to enjoy watching the show. And so Jesus, you know, on a similar level, could say, well, there's people here for the wrong reasons, but they make it look like a bigger crowd, and their enthusiasm is infectious, and so whatever it takes to get more numbers in the crowd, I'll do it. And so I'll acknowledge their insincere worship if it promotes a little bit of sincere worship in some other people. Is that what Jesus is doing here? Now, looking at the other guys in the show, they actually knew ahead of time. Because if you watch the show, the guys sort of talk amongst themselves. They sort of have to. Only one of them can talk to the girl at a time. And so the other guys are talking amongst themselves. And very often, what is said in the group stays in the group. There's sort of a code here, right? And guys know this, that what guys say to you, you don't really repeat among the women, and vice versa. And so there was sort of a code. And, you know, they probably recognized, well, if this guy is here for the wrong reasons, that will eventually be figured out. And if he sticks around longer, that's fine, because then it makes me look better. And so they were perhaps kind of wanting to use the code for their own benefits. Now, looking the same way at this Jesus story, then people in the crowd whose intentions are perhaps a little bit less than sincere, they might say, you know, we're entitled to our fandom. We're entitled to celebrate however we want. And, you know, if Jesus doesn't want our adulation, if he doesn't want our support, he really should get out of the celebrity business. And this is what we do to celebrities sometimes. They want to be celebrities, so they are inviting us into their living rooms and bedrooms, and now it is our business who they're dating and who they're marrying and what their family plans are. And so did Jesus have a right? Maybe Jesus even recognized he didn't really have a right to tell people how to worship and who to worship and for what reasons. Now maybe Jesus was sitting on the donkey, recognizing that some of these people are worshiping insincerely and only sort of in his mind receiving the worship of the sincere worshipers, recognizing that there is sort of a code of celebrity that he has to kind of smile and nod his way through. But what was Jesus thinking? It had to be more profound than this. Well, this may not be a new revelation to you, but I want to suggest to you that the legacy of insincere worship didn't stop on Good Friday. It didn't stop on Palm Sunday. That the church, in fact, has a legacy, a 2,000-year-long legacy of insincere worship. Now, some of this, of course, is going to come through our cultural eyes, that we in our mainstream society have a way of understanding what is sincere and good worship and what isn't. And so right now we would use the measuring stick if someone has a sincere relationship with Jesus. If that is what they are nurturing, if that is what they are pursuing, then they are in it for the right reasons. And we would write off a long list of other things as the wrong reasons. And so whether it's throughout history or in other parts of, even other parts of the church now, we might recognize the wrong reasons. So I wrote a bit of a list here, so I'll go through some of them. At various times, people have joined the church simply because of national identity, even family identity, that this is what it means to be French. I'm going to join the Catholic Church. This is what it means to be German. I'm joining the Lutheran Church. This is what it means to be a member of the Lowland family. I'm joining the Mennonite Church. Often the church is presented as the winning side, and you really should be on the winning side. And so we join the church so that we can be winners. This has happened at various times. There have been charismatic leaders that have brought large groups of people to the church by the leader's own charisma and charm and personality. And the people in the group might not have enough faith and understanding to sustain their participation in the church, but they have followed a charismatic leader. And is that the right reason? Very often, in different kinds of settings, there's a kind of groupthink that can happen. And so we join the church because other people are joining the church, and it's the cool thing to do. Now, in our situation, it's easy to observe that a lot of those are the wrong reasons, or at least by themselves would be the wrong reasons. But I'm not here to point fingers at other people for doing the wrong thing. I'm not presenting to them, I'm presenting to you. And so we are journeying through this together. And so looking at this story, looking at the story of Jesus entering Jerusalem, Jesus receiving worship from a crowd of people, and recognizing that many of them are expressing insincere worship, or certainly worship from a faith that cannot and will not be sustained. And so where do we fit within that story? Now, within this story, we might like to identify with the disciples. The disciples are here. The disciples have been with Jesus for a long time, and they were with Jesus before it was cool in this sort of public sense, and they will continue to be with Jesus. But where do we fit within this crowd? What are the reasons that bring us to this place, to this point? And so here we are, worshiping, participating in the worship activities and rituals. And are we here for the right reasons? I'm not asking that accusatorily. I'm inviting you to reflect on your own situation. Now, in all of our lives, we will be able to identify with some of these other stories, some of these other wrong reasons. That many of us were brought to church by our families. That by itself isn't wrong. And in fact, a lot of the Old Testament is written in such a way that worship is corporate, that salvation is corporate, that this is something that happens to a group, and a group acts this out together. And so there is some integrity there. Many of us have been persuaded and nurtured by charismatic leaders. And so that by itself, of course, isn't the problem. But when we take away these surface things, is the intention, is the sincerity in our hearts enough to be sustained without those other reasons? That's not a question that I can answer for you. And so, as Jesus walks through the city of Jerusalem, as we envision this scene, let's place ourselves in the crowd. And we are celebrating. We are cheering. That's what we've been doing today. We've been singing songs of praise. We've been offering up words of praise in prayer and participating in group worship. But when the celebration ends, when the difficulty comes, do we have enough to sustain us? What I want to suggest to you is that Jesus looked around to this crowd and he saw the big picture. As Jesus approached Jerusalem, well before this story happens, Jesus looked over the city, and what was he thinking? Was he thinking, here is the city that will celebrate my arrival. Here is the city upon which the faith of our fathers is built. Jesus looked at the city and he wept. And he said, this is the city that has killed prophets and will continue to kill prophets. And he wept for the city. And so even before the celebration happened, he saw the big picture. And he knew that these people would receive him and then reject him. But he walked through the city and he received their praise. And he walked with integrity through the streets as he was jeered and denounced. Jesus knows where you are at. Jesus knows the celebration that you're participating in, how sincere that is. Jesus knows where you will go when the time gets tough. But Jesus wants to be there with you. And so as we celebrate with Jesus, now as we celebrate with Jesus in these moments of worship and in our times of celebration, Jesus is with us and is happy to be with us and is happy to receive our praise. But we will go from here and we will experience different things, and Jesus knows that big picture as well. And so, while we ask ourselves, is my faith strong enough to sustain me through difficult times? The other implied answer within the relationship context, of course, there are two sides. And when we can ask ourselves within a relationship, is my love and affection enough to sustain this relationship in difficult times? But there are two parts. There are two parts. Within any relationship, between parents, friends, any kind of relationship, there will be times when one side does not have enough love and affection and compassion and patience to sustain the relationship. And it will take the other person to balance it out. And then the pendulum will swing, and then the other person will have to be the strong one. Within our relationship with Jesus, there will be times perhaps that our faith might not be able to stand on its own. But Jesus is there. And Jesus is reaching out to us, and Jesus is embracing us, and Jesus is walking with us. And so as we journey towards the cross, as we journey towards Jesus' cross, as we journey towards our cross, Jesus walks with us and will continue to walk with us and empower us. So I encourage you and I pray that God, that you will feel God's presence with you, that you will feel comforted and supported by God in your times of difficulty and in your times of celebration. Amen.